Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are broadcasting from the studios of KSFR and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want to listen to it, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. I would like to welcome now, it's the day before Thanksgiving, our regular and amazing Thanksgiving hostess, Stacy Pearl, is here. She's the host of Mouth of Wonder, and she's a chef with Walter Burt Catering. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
This is the third year we've done it?
Yes, this is a tradition.
It has become a tradition just almost as long as Thanksgiving itself.
Yes, absolutely.
So we're here to talk, as we do every year, about the Thanksgiving meal and what makes up the Thanksgiving meal. And it occurred to me this year, you don't have appetizers on Thanksgiving.
No. You know, that's because the meal is so enormous that you don't have vegetables either. It's just a giant carbohydrate fest with a lot of tryptophan.
And protein.
And then you fall asleep and it's over. Yeah. You know, you could do sort of like, I think, potato chips and onion soup mix dip.
That would be wrong.
That's pretty much all you have time for. Because also, when you're preparing this meal, the oven is always full. You know, because it's a long prep time, so you don't really have room for anything. And so yeah, I think beer maybe is the hors d'oeuvres for this meal.
That's a good point. Now, what time does the Thanksgiving meal start? I mean, obviously, you have to – unless you are an early riser, which despite this program, I am really not by nature, and certainly not on Thanksgiving – in order to get that bird in, stuffed in the oven and out, you're not going to be eating any time like noon.
No, I think noon is out of the question. There are sort of two thoughts about Thanksgiving. I think large families that gather from all over the place and maybe with older people involved, they tend to do that afternoon meal, which means if you start eating at 4, by 6 everybody is snoring on the couch. Or in my house, we eat Thanksgiving at dinner time because I work Thanksgiving Day, and it's not until everyone else is fed and all the orders are out that I get home to do my meal. So I eat it at a normal Thanksgiving time, in normal dinner time, you know, 6 o'clock.
So in order to get your turkey out of the oven by, well, see, the thing is 6 o'clock is late for a lot of people because then you have to eat other meals during the day. I mean, we've tried for 2 and 3 and actually succeeded on more than one occasion. But you've still got to get up fairly much on the early side to get this all going.
Well, I think that's partially true and partially illusion. I mean, I've known people who got up at 5 in the morning. There is no bird that requires 7 hours of cooking. I mean, if that's what you're doing, there's a reason people hate turkey. In reality, no matter how large your bird, I don't think that many people cook a bird. Say you're going to cook a 24-pound turkey. Even so, you do not need to get up before dawn to put the turkey in the oven.
That's a good point. But you have to make the stuffing and the apple pies.
Well, the thing about Thanksgiving, though, is that so much of that can be done ahead of time very successfully. I think ultimately you want that turkey to come out of the oven and be hot and wonderful. You let it chill, cool a little bit to make slicing easier. But rather than reheating it, if you have the option of having the turkey be the last thing to the table and then everyone applauds and you get out the electric knife and you start carving the bird, that's the best way to go. But your potatoes, your stuffing, your cranberry sauce can all be done a day ahead, so you don't have to be stressing. It's supposed to be an enjoyable family holiday.
Now, 24-pound turkey. I once actually, a few Thanksgivings ago, when my terrier Honey was really fat, took a picture of the 24 – it was actually a 25-pound turkey on the table with the 25-pound dog.
Did they both look equally appetizing?
You know, in a funny way, they did. But in different ways.
And, you know, putting out the 24 – I would suggest for most people it makes more sense to cook 2 12-pound turkeys. It's easier to handle than carrying and moving. A lot of people can barely lift a 24-pound turkey.
Well, they need to go to the gym.
That's where they do. But they're not going to do that on Thanksgiving morning. So the better thing to do is do 2 smaller birds. It's easier to handle and easier to carve. And then you could present one at the table and have one in the kitchen being carved. And I've taken to doing that a lot more, especially because a lot of people – don't have ovens that are that large. And if you can barely get the turkey in the oven, it's not going to cook that well.
Why is that?
Because it needs room for the heat to circulate. You know, you need a little air in there to keep – because once you put a cold turkey in a 400-degree oven, you've dropped it down to 250 degrees. Then it has to get up. So by
the time – is that what going cold turkey is about?
I thought that was drug-related. I don't know. Cold turkey. So I always think it's better to do a smaller bird – get it prepared. If you have to do a large bird, the important thing to remember is give it enough time to defrost.
Mm-hmm.
It is not safe to take a turkey, leave it in your kitchen overnight. First of all, it's not going to be defrosted the second day, and it's not the safe way to do it. If you're buying a frozen turkey, which frankly at this point I would buy a fresh turkey because you can get great ones here in town. But if you're buying the frozen bird, it's more inexpensive. You need 4 days in the refrigerator to get it defrosted. Just put it in the fridge, let it defrost slowly. It'll be a much better product.
And that's better than leaving it in your 68-degree house.
Yes, or in your garage. Yes.
So there are many different ways to cook a turkey. You have talked about deep frying turkeys.
You know, we one year did a party. It was a Cajun-themed Thanksgiving, and they wanted deep-fried turkey. And I had heard about this, but I'd never done it. And I thought you just put up a big pot of oil on the stove and you drop the bird in. I talked to my friend, Mr. Margreff, and he said, "You can't do that in the kitchen. Are you crazy?" I'm like, "Why? We've got to..." Okay, so you have to buy the turkey fryer set up, and you have to have a large parking lot.
Yeah, and Margreff gets a cut of the...
You know, and an asbestos suit and gloves would be helpful. The procedure is you take the bird, you drop it in the pot of water to see how much it will displace.
Right.
Then you take the turkey out, you take the water, you spill that out, you dry the pot, you replace it with oil. You bring the oil. So we're talking a gigantic pot of oil on a giant gas burner with a gas tank and a hose in the middle of the parking lot. You bring that oil up to 350
degrees. It's really too dangerous to do it in your kitchen.
It is much too dangerous to do in your kitchen. You then take the turkey, which they tell you to dry. It's pretty impossible to dry a turkey. And then it comes with like an injection needle to put herbs and spices under the skin, which is a great idea. So you've got the bird, and then it's on this rack, which makes it stand up and looks like it's surrendering. And then you carefully lower it in the oil, at which point...
How hot is the oil?
350 degrees, at which point... Flames start shooting up because water, oil, spillage, splashing, flames are shooting up. It's going down the line where the hose is. It was the most frightening thing I've ever done. And then once you get it in the oil, it's okay. But the process of getting it in and out of the oil, you should have the fire department at your doorstep just in case. But once you get it in the oil, it takes like 45 minutes to cook a large bird, and it's to die for, delicious. But nobody should do this at home.
So where do you do it?
You need a lot. You need a parking lot. Next to the fire department would be good.
Well, there's a lot of empty parking lots on Thanksgiving because one of the nice things about
that day is... They roast chilies in the parking lot. They should have turkeys roasting everywhere.
Exactly. We're talking to Stacy Pearl. So you've done this once, but that's not the normal way you...
No. The normal way, I think the safest way, is you roast it in the oven. It's not a comp... The basic procedure is you... Put some herb rub on it of any sort. You could do your classic salt, pepper, garlic, paprika with a little water. You brush it on, put some water in the pan, throw it in the oven. That's your generic process.
You put some water in the pan.
Because that's going to be the base of your gravy. And then you baste it. And
it's not because it needs to be in a steamy environment.
Yeah, it likes a little schwitz before it cooks. No, because that's what the rub starts to mix with the juices of the turkey. It drains into the pan. You keep adding water to that, and then that mixes with your pan juices, and that's the basis of a great gravy.
Very interesting.
But then you could get much more complicated. Like, for instance, you could do a Southwestern rub where you mix smoked paprika, which is a wonderful ingredient with a turkey, and some Mexican oregano and a little cumin and salt pepper, and you brush that on. I like to put herbs on the skin. I don't think you need to put additional oil. Basically, there's enough juice in the turkey. But some people do like to put a little butter under the skin. I don't really – that whole sticking your hand under the skin process, not really popular with me. And then you can do balsamic rubs. You could do anything you want. That's your place to get creative. The crucial thing, though, is you can put anything you want on it. The thing is not to overcook it.
Now, how do you know when it's overcooked? How do you know when it's cooked the right amount?
Okay. The best way I always tell people is you must use a meat thermometer. Meat thermometers are cheap. There's nothing fancy about them. That you don't cook the turkey with the meat thermometer in. You take the turkey out. You test it in a few thick places like by the wing, in the thick part of the breast. A cooked turkey is cooked at 165 degrees to 170. I take it out at 165 because it keeps cooking. You also, if you buy the kind of turkeys, the more processed turkeys, like the butter balls and things like that, they have those little plastic pop-up thermometers. They're fine.
They work.
They totally work. Trust them. My lovely mother-in-law, bless her, she would see the thing pop and give it an extra 30 minutes.
Uh-oh.
Not necessary. It should not be falling apart like sand. Turkey is a juicy meat. unless you overcook it, and then you're pretty much – there's nothing. Once you've overcooked it, you could smother it in gravy, but it's pretty much the reason that people don't eat turkey all year round.
So let's get back to what you can put on the turkey and how much that really affects the flavor. I have made more than one turkey that was just simply draped with organic bacon, and that's very good.
How could that be bad?
And the gravy's good.
Yeah. Who doesn't love bacon? I think that's a great idea.
There's a few people who feel that they don't love bacon.
Well, you shouldn't invite them. They need to eat at someone else's house where
they're
serving the tofu bird.
They're the tofu people.
They're the tofu bird people.
So, but let's say you make something, you make a rub with herbs. Does that really, does that go into the flavor of the meat? Does it go through the skin and really permeate the...
It does, especially if you baste. But I should also mention that there's a place for fresh herbs and dried herbs. In a rub on a turkey with the skin, you want to use dried herbs. Fresh herbs, over a long period of time, lose all their strength and all flavor, and you don't want to use them in something like this. And I want to say how important it is to baste. It's a simple thing to do. You have one of those silly turkey basters, and you take the liquid from the bottom and from inside, and you put it over the top, and this keeps bringing the flavors through the bird, and it will soak in. You can't just cook it and go out for 2 hours and come back and hope it's good.
How often do you baste?
Every 30 minutes. And then if you've put things like balsamic, which has a little bit of sugar in it, your turkey skin will start to get very, very dark. All you need to do is cover it with tinfoil.
Now, do you cover it with tinfoil at the beginning or at the end?
If you cover it with tinfoil at the beginning, the skin sticks to the tinfoil, and then you have a mess.
And it's disgusting to eat.
It looks icky. Yeah. Let the skin get to the color you like and then cover it with tinfoil.
Oh. See, this is very good. It's good that we do this every year.
We
learn new things.
You know, everybody should be – it's like everyone should have a classic black dress. Everybody should be able to make a turkey.
Everybody. Every girl.
No, everybody.
Should have a
classic everybody black should dress. Have a black – everybody. In this town, everybody.
We're talking to Stacy Pearl. Stuffing.
I love stuffing.
I love stuffing too.
Now, stuffing, you can do a variety of things. You can go to the store and get little bread cubes with the mix. And I think that's awful, personally, and it's always way too salty. But a lot of people – you know how sometimes something's not good, but you've always had it all your life, so that's tradition? So a lot of people are like, I've got to get the stuffing from the box. Well, then you can do that. But personally, I have a lot of wonderful breads in this – and you can, in this town, you can get all kinds of breads. So I like to experiment. Sometimes I'll make cornbread, let it dry out, crumble it up, use that. Fresh cornbread stuffing is the most delicious thing in the whole world. Cornbread is cheap. Now, you could buy boxes of cornbread mix. It's very simple to do. And bake it up and let it sit on your counter for 2 days and cube that up for stuffing. That's one option.
Now, it has to be dry because otherwise it'll be soggy?
Yeah. Yeah. You want a little crust on there.
Mm-hmm.
You can use focaccia. You could use sourdough baguette. Any kind of bread. And that's another whole element of flavor.
You can use that raisin bread from Sage.
Oh, that would be fabulous.
It is fabulous.
That would be absolutely fabulous. Yeah. And then you have your choice. A lot of I like in my stuffings, I like a little sweet and a little savory. So I'll mix some nuts in. Pecans are wonderful and stuff. Walnuts are wonderful. And then I'll do some chopped apple or some chopped pear. Dried fruit works great in stuffing.
Celery.
And then, of course, you can get your meats in there. Sausage stuffing is to die for. Delicious. A traditional New England stuffing, oyster stuffing. It sounds a little weird. Really, really good.
Giblets.
Of course.
They come with the turkey.
They're free. Yeah. So there's a lot of options you have on your stuffing. And you could also do vegetarian stuff. I'm not vegetarian stuffing, but just simple bread, fruit stuffing if you don't want to get involved in other funky meats, you know.
Yeah, there are people who won't eat the giblet, so I'll make a separate giblet stuffing next to the turkey and then put the non-giblet inside the turkey.
Yes, and then, of course, you have the stuffing in the bird, stuffing out of the bird dilemma. A lot of people think
– Both,
you
duh.
Know, we do both. Exactly, but a lot of people think it's unsanitary in the bird, and a lot of people think it doesn't have any flavor, it's not in the bird. You know, it's plenty sanitary as long as you cook your bird properly and you take it out and you don't let it sit at the counter for 2 hours before you serve it. If you take it out of the bird, put it in a dish and put it in the oven and keep it hot.
So how do you make the stuffing if it's not inside the turkey?
You take a sauté pan, you sauté up – I would start with sautéing up onions, celery, a little bit of carrots – and then I'd get that all cooked in a lot of butter, and then I'd add my, say, focaccia breadcrumbs or cubes, toss that together, add some walnuts, and then I take a little of those wonderful turkey drippings, add that to the stuffing, and then I put it in like a Pyrex dish, cover it with tinfoil, and bake it in the oven. So you get crust.
Now, hang on. There's a time problem here. You haven't even started cooking the turkey yet. How are you going to get drippings?
you can make – well, see, I do it because I make so many of them. That's a very good point. What you can do is make a little separate pot of stock. Take some of the little bits of turkey. You could take the giblets out of the bird and make a little stock. You could even use a can of chicken stock if you're not going to do that, just so you have that flavor, that poultry flavor mixed in with it.
You know, it's another thing that I like to do is put in brandy or rum or some flavor like that.
Oh, yeah.
It really permeates the stuffing and the turkey.
Another nice thing for stuffing is mushrooms, which also are really enhanced by cooking them with a little bit of Madeira. That works very nice. And then you get that flavor, and that goes into – I also put a little Madeira or a little Marsala into my gravy sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing. Not to mention celery. We didn't even mention that basic, celery or onions.
Celery or onions are the basics for stuffing. You can't make stuffing without them.
So you've got the whole thing. You've got your turkey stuffed. You've got a little side dish of stuffing on the side. You've got your turkey rubbed, you're basting, it comes out of the oven. But meanwhile, you've got a lot of other things to do while it's cooking.
Those are the things you all did yesterday. You should totally make your cranberry sauce.
Some people didn't do that yesterday.
Okay, well, to make cranberry sauce, I gave you this recipe last year. I'm going to give it to you again. The best cranberry sauce we ever make is a bag of fresh cranberries, which you can keep in the freezer for the whole year, frankly. A bag of cranberries, one orange, skin and all, chopped up. And a cup of sugar in the food processor, pulse, 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 cranberry, orange relish, absolutely to die for, delicious. You don't need to be anywhere near your stove to make that.
That's so true. And you can also just make it without the oranges, as they have in The Joy of Cooking, and that's pretty darn good,
yes,
too.
Or you can open the can and it could wobble out onto the plate. A lot of people like that.
You could have a can-shaped...
The wobble thing, you know? I don't know. You know, tradition, it's hard to account for.
So what are some variations on stuffing that you like, if any?
On stuffing?
I mean on cranberry sauce.
On cranberry sauce. Okay. I do a cranberry chutney, which has figs in it and port wine and rosemary.
I'm coming to your house.
Which is really nice. It has a really sophisticated – the figs give it this really deep flavor, which I really like. And sometimes I do a tangerine and cranberry cooked relish, mm-hmm. which is kind of smoother when I actually add a little bit of gelatin to it. And it has – tangerine has such a great sexy flavor. It's wonderful. So that's another one that I do. And sometimes I do just like a fig and walnut chutney, which replaces the cranberries, which is also kind of nice and a little bit different.
The fig thing sounds incredible.
Yeah. Figs and turkey really work.
Let's step back a second. We're going back to the turkey and what herbs go on it. Have you used rosemary? Is that too strong?
No. Rosemary is fine. I think the trick on all those kind of herbs is not to use too much. And I think for a rub, what I tend to do, which I don't use for anything else, is I will pulverize the rosemary into almost a powder. Because the twigs, when it roasts for so long, they're like hard.
They burn.
They're hard, yeah, and they're not very pleasant. So if you take it and you could just put it in the food processor or just like crumple it with your knife, which is what I do, it's better. Or you could buy pulverized rosemary. And same thing, I'll do that with sage too. It's sage, of course, with turkey is a natural.
Right.
You know, so that's really nice to do.
We're talking to Stacy Pearl. So we've taken the turkey out of the oven. Now we want to make the gravy.
Oh, the gravy. That's the most important part. So now you have this pan with these what look really like nasty drippings, but they're the basic for everything. You take
they
the turkey out.
They look good to me.
And then you put the pan on the stove, and it's got water in it because you've been adding water and you've been basting. You cook it down a little bit so it just starts to bubble. You want it all bubbling, and you scrape the bottom of the pan, and I pour a little shot of brandy or Madeira in it. And with a whisk, you sort of break up the bits that have stuck to the pan because they're the tastiest parts. And then I make a mixture of a little bit of cornstarch and water, or you can use butter and flour, which is a roux. Either thickener works. And I slowly whisk that into the liquid, and I keep whisking, and it'll get thicker and thicker. And don't worry if you get lumps. I keep cooking that till it's a nice consistency. And then what I do is I take it out of the pan and I strain it into a clean saucepan.
Mm.
And so then you have a pure, beautifully textured gravy. And then I go about seasoning it.
So the little chunks that stay in the strainer, do you eat them?
No, I do not eat them, Mary Charlotte. You can give those to your dog, probably.
I could eat them.
Or you can eat them. Yeah. And so then in the gravy to season it, I will adjust the salt and pepper. Don't always assume it will need salt and pepper because the gravy has – the turkey has been seasoned. So a lot of that goes into the gravy. And
especially
then,
if you've got bacon on it.
Yeah, especially if you have bacon on it. And see, the bacon, all the fat from the bacon will be absorbed by the thickener. So it should be nice. And then I usually adjust it with – sometimes I put a little shot of soy sauce in it if it needs a little sort of deep flavor. And then I add a little salt and pepper. Sometimes if it's a little bit bitter, I'll add a teaspoon of sugar. You know, in my mind, I have a flavor that I want it to be. It should be well-balanced. It shouldn't be sweet. It shouldn't be salty. And it should have a poultry kind of flavor. And if I need to, I will cook the extra turkey carcasses that I have, because I make turkeys for a few days, and I'll add a little bit of turkey stock. And if you don't have turkey stock, as I said, a little bit of, you know, a lot of stores in town sell a great, not too salty organic chicken stock, and that's great for thinning your gravy if you find that it's just too thick and too strong.
Side dishes. You have talked about the lack of green vegetables on Thanksgiving.
Do canned green beans count?
No.
That's the only vegetable anyone ever asked for.
But you can make nice fresh green beans.
You absolutely can, and I do.
Frozen
but
fresh.
I have customers who specifically want the recipe off the French's fried onion ring things. And it's like made with Campbell's soup mix and green beans. And I make that.
These are people raised in the 50s.
Yes, and they want that. So I make that. But you're absolutely right. There's no reason. Fresh green beans are an excellent choice, and they go really well with the turkey dinner with a little lemon butter, a little walnut butter. You don't need much. But I think a green vegetable – in our house, we always do coleslaw. That's the closest we come with a vegetable. It's great with turkey. You could elaborate. You could do a fennel slaw. And these are all great things. They're do-ahead things. I think a fennel slaw, a carrot slaw, a lavender coleslaw all work really well with this meal and are great the next day when you make the turkey sandwiches.
So no salad?
No. I mean, you can put it out, but I guarantee you no one's going to eat it. Have you ever had salad at your turkey dinner?
I don't remember.
I mean, I've put it out before, and it just sat there, and everyone's like, oh, salad. Give me more potatoes.
Right. So let's talk about potatoes.
Yes. So you have options here as well. I think a sweet potato is a great option for this. You know, a candied sweet potato, a caramelized sweet potato. We do something called sweet potato planks, which we cut the sweet potatoes into about quarter-inch slices, rub them with a little olive oil, a little bit of curry, a little bit of cumin, put them on a sheet pan, and roast them.
Really?
So it's almost like a French fry, but you always like about a tablespoon of oil per potato. And they're delicious. They're creamy tasting. And you could have that as a side dish if you don't want to go really heavy into the sugar. But, you know, a lot of people go with the sweet whipped mashed sweet potatoes with the marshmallow and the whole thing, you know.
How do you do caramelized and candied?
Caramelized and candies, all I do is I boil the sweet potatoes. I skin them and boil them in sort of quarters. And then – so they're just about done, because the thing about a caramelization is it's so much sugar in it, it will burn. So you need to have the potatoes that you're just finishing them. And then I make a mixture of brown sugar and butter, a little orange, sometimes a little bit of rum, and just melt that till it's all smooth, toss the sweet potatoes in it, and then you bake it. But you have – and I usually bake it covered with tinfoil, because you have to be careful because that will burn. But it's delicious.
So when you cook them beforehand skinned, and how do you know – how much to cook them so they're not overcooked by the time you get done baking them?
When you could put a fork into them smoothly, not so they mush apart, and pull it out, and you're not killing yourself. They're just tender enough. That's the way to stop. And depending how big you cut them is how many minutes. So I don't want to give you an exact minute amount.
So those are some options for sweet potatoes. What about regular potatoes? I mean, you have to make mashed potatoes.
Can you beat mashed potatoes? How about dressing them up with a little mascarpone and truffle oil? Very easy to do. Truffle oil is very accessible. People think you're very fancy schmancy if you use truffle oil. Or what about if you put just some sour cream and chives and butter? You know, Yukon Gold potatoes make fabulous mashed potatoes. But I find if I use Yukon Golds, I cut them half with regular potatoes because the texture is not quite right.
Oh, really?
You know, you could also whip up butternut squash in the same way, which is a little bit more calorie efficient, or less calories, I should say. And that works beautifully. And I think you want a mash. You've got gravy. You want something to suck it up with, you know.
So you wouldn't make the kind of fried potato planks the way you made the sweet potato planks?
I do at other meals, but no, not with this meal.
Not with this meal. So really mashed potatoes are required.
You can't beat them. And I like them. I like them lumpy, I must admit. I'm not for the super
process. I was going to say, how do you mash them?
I mash them with a masher. You know, with one of those zigzaggy metal things, you smush them down on in the bowl. If you put them into a food processor, what happens is they get sticky. You know, that you develop, I don't know if it's the gluten or the starch in them, and they become like wallpaper paste. The less you work with potatoes, the better. And I find a simple mash, you know, and don't use anything but real butter.
Well, that goes without saying.
Of course it does.
I am not in the margarine camp.
No, me neither.
In general.
It's never been in my house, ever.
You know, I've also been noticing lately that there is a huge difference in the quality of butter that's available.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, absolutely. You can get now locally Plugra and other – they have a slightly higher butter fat content. There's less milk solids in them, the European butters, and it makes a huge difference. And also, you want to get the butter that's wrapped – has a foil wrapper because butter will accept the odors of everything in your fridge. So it's really important to care for it properly and get it fresh. And butter has an enormous flavor. It's not just a fat.
No, it has a wonderful flavor when it does. I have to say the best butter I've ever had is at my grandmother's house in Germany, in Bavaria, where she would get it from the local farmers. There's nothing I've ever had in this country.
She probably knew the name of the cow that it came from.
Probably.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. We're talking to Stacey Pearl. So we're talking mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, green beans of one kind or another. But then there's things that involve onions. What else do you have on side dishes?
Well, I think a great choice is pearl onions, which you can cook in a cream sauce. And pearl onions, though they can be very labor-intensive, are one of those things you could actually buy frozen, and they're very, very good quality.
Did you invent them?
Yes, I personally invented pearl onions. That's an old family recipe. But what I do is I take some heavy cream and just reduce it down and put a little bit of fresh tarragon and a little bit of Dijon in it. And then I take the pearl onions and I saute them first to get some of the – because if you're using the frozen ones, there'll be a bit of liquid in them. Saute them to get a little color on them and get the liquid out of them. Then mix them in the cream and then reduce them down a little bit. It's the most delicious thing you've ever had. There's nothing to it. You can put peas in there, too. Peas and pearl onions
now,
work good together.
Now, peas are another besides
that's
green
a green
beans.
Vegetable. That's counts. That's two. Oh,
that's
we've got
two.
Tons of them, yes.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great side dish. Personally, I love Brussels sprouts. Another side dish. Not everyone loves them. I don't recommend them too often.
You have to be Central European.
Yeah, yeah. But they're delicious. You can roast them. And you know what else, Mary Charlotte? They roast with bacon.
Oh, really?
Butter.
That
Brussels
would make
sprouts
them better.
Bacon are really good. Yeah. Yep.
I did not too long ago, and not here in Santa Fe, have some kind of deep fried Brussels sprout thing in a restaurant that was really, really good.
Ooh.
You couldn't even tell they were Brussels sprouts.
Uh huh. That sounds good.
So, okay. So we have our onions, our sweet potatoes, our mashed potatoes, our green beans and peas. Any other side dishes?
No.
Or we're done.
That's enough. We need to leave room for dessert.
That's right. Dessert.
Now, dessert, can you ever have too many desserts? No. Okay, the classics, you cannot beat a pumpkin pie, except maybe with a really good pumpkin. I personally prefer pumpkin cheesecake. I like the texture better.
Oh, my goodness.
I do. I know it's not traditional, but I happen to love a good pumpkin cheesecake. So that's one thing I'd always include. A great pecan pie. And once again, you could do a pecan pie, and right before you bake it, swirl some semi-sweet chocolate in the batter. That's not too bad. You need to have a bucket
not
of whipped cream.
Not too bad.
You need to have a bucket of whipped cream. And I'm not talking Cool Whip here. And then
– no, as we use real butter, we use real cream and we whip
but
it.
But can I just stop and mention – have you seen the size of the showcase of Cool Whip at Smith's?
No.
It's like four doors wide.
Is that for Thanksgiving?
No, it's all the time. I have never seen such an assortment in my life.
I don't know how much of it gets eaten and how much it just gets
It's good forever. It's
for
good
fun.
Forever.
I know, but people, children use it to entertain themselves.
I don't even want to think about what it gets used for. But my mother – who just got here from New York, was stopped dead in her tracks, and she said, look at all that Cool Whip. Because she's a pure cream person. She would never eat. My mother has heavy cream on her cereal every morning.
I used to eat Raisin Bran with light cream for breakfast.
Oh, yeah?
It was
that's
really, good.
You should try
really
it with
good.
Heavy cream.
You
and bacon.
You want to gain weight. It's helpful. I actually did want to gain weight, and I succeeded.
Oh, good. Well, that's good to know.
We're talking to Stacey Pearl. So there's not – okay, so – I challenge you. You say there's never too many desserts. Tell us five more.
Okay. So then I think you need to know about an apple cobbler. I think it's an excellent dessert. These are your fruit groups, right? Can't
beat
an apple cobbler.
It's almost like a vegetable.
And you know what else I think is nice? You could also do a pumpkin cake or a nut or spice cake.
That sounds good.
You know, a spice cake frosted with like a sort of caramel buttercream. It's nice. It's a little bit lighter. That's nice to do, you know. Or a classic honey cake is nice. And you're going to need something chocolate. So you can do a German chocolate cake. You could do some hand-rolled chocolate truffles. A little plate of truffles at the end of the meal with hazelnut liqueur
in them.
You
buy those.
No, we make those. You know, truffles are very easy to make and also a great do-ahead thing. And there's nothing to them.
Can you freeze them?
You refrigerate.
Okay.
I once you freeze chocolate, you're going to start messing with it, and it's going to maybe get white and cloudy looking. But they're very easy to do. There's a million. Maybe I'll do some truffle recipes on my show, and there's a million easy ones to do, and they're very impressive. And at the end of the meal, a little plate of chocolate truffles. How can that be bad?
No, it cannot be bad.
Yeah, and then I think one more thing, maybe a fruit tart, just a straight fruit tart. Simple for those people who say, I'm watching my calories. Oh, fruit, I could have that. You know, a little almond crust, a little cream cheese filling, and some fresh berries. It's the light dessert of the five.
So you wouldn't have a fresh fruit plate because, like the salad, nobody would eat it.
I don't think so. Maybe later when people are on the couch and reclining,
right,
they'll say, you know, I can use a piece of fruit.
Right.
And then you can have some fresh grapes perhaps.
You know? Now, you didn't even mention apple pie, which is one of
I said apple cobbler.
Okay. But apple pie.
Yeah. Apple pie is great. You know, apple pie at this altitude, most of them are kind of not so good.
I make a good apple pie.
What kind of apples do you use?
Well, that's the trick. You have to use apples that are not Granny Smith.
Exactly. You have to use an eating apple instead of a cooking apple.
Exactly.
Because what happens is the crust cooks before the filling does, and you end up with a fully cooked crust and raw apples.
Mm-hmm.
So despite what we all know that you should use a hard cooking apple, you need to use like – I use a Golden Delicious, an apple I don't even like.
I know.
Which makes a great pie.
It, in fact, at this altitude does make a great pie. There's also another trick which – well, if I say this on the radio, my secret will be blown forever.
No.
Add to when you're cutting up the apples.
Bacon? Do you put bacon?
No, I do not put bacon in the apples. I could, but that wasn't what I was going to say. Is when you put them in the bowl, you slice them up, and you're waiting to make your pie crust. You cut up the apples first, and then you put them in a little marinade of rum and brandy.
Oh yeah, like that's going to be bad. Yeah,
it's
that sounds
so
great.
So good. And nobody can tell what it is. They just say, wow, this is the best apple pie I've ever
and
had.
And that probably helps tenderize the apples too.
I think it does. Yeah. And so at this altitude, I have not had too much trouble with making pies that are burned.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to make sure that you're you can cover them with a crust, but you can also make that
– the crumble topping.
Crumbly topping
yes.
with plenty of brown sugar and butter. And not too much flour, and you're pretty much going to be okay.
I like that. I think that's a really good choice because a lot of people, too, are a little freaked out by pie crusts. So, you know, if you have to, if you can handle it, though pie crusts are no big deal, you could buy the crust for the bottom, put your apples in it, and then make a homemade crumble topping, and then you don't have to roll out any dough, and you still have a homemade apple pie.
Did I tell you that I went to a junior high school where the women's movement had never penetrated, and we learned in home ec to make the perfect pie crust?
Nice.
And it's I tell you what, it stands you in good stead forever. We also learned to iron a men's shirt, but that's another story. We're talking to Stacey Pearl. So, drinks. What do you drink with the Thanksgiving meal?
Let's see. I know, I think I personally like apple cider. I think that's a nice spiced cider. Now, that's something you'd also have before the meal. You know, if you make a nice spiced cider, the whole house will smell lovely. Everybody can drink it. And that's a nice thing to have. Wine, I think if you're going to do a wine, a nice light white wine would be really lovely with the meal. Some people, it's a family gathering, they have to drink heavily, you know. There's nothing you do about that. Some families, they have to have an open bar at every family gathering, so that exists as a possibility.
So bourbon and martinis.
I would say there's a lot of bourbon and martini and Manhattan Thanksgiving dinners being eaten around town.
Right. And so you have to be careful not to have the meal too late.
Yes.
Because otherwise.
But everyone's going to fall asleep after the meal anyway.
Now, what is, in fact, the tryptophan story?
Well, turkey has a lot of it.
What is it?
Tryptophan is, now you've got me.
It makes you go to sleep.
It makes you go to sleep. I think it's an amino acid. And, it totally just knocks you out.
So you get knocked out. And then if you haven't eaten too late in the day, if you haven't had your meal too late in the day, there's this thing which we call the second round.
Yes. Well, this is often – it's funny because this is often when the people who make the meal finally sit down and enjoy it. About 10 o'clock at night, that's when we would do it. My mom would go in the kitchen and she'd put out the whole – and then she'd sit down and go, now this is a Thanksgiving meal. Now I'm having it. Because when you're cooking – I mean a lot of people, this is the biggest meal they cook all year. They feel greatly under pressure. They can't enjoy it. There's all these people. There's all these things to do. And when all the guests are gone or sleeping – they could get their meal and they could finally sit down and enjoy it. And it always tastes better at that time.
It tastes so good at that time.
Yeah.
And so you've had your leftovers. What is it about leftovers a little later? I mean, do they keep cooking? Do the flavors keep blending?
There are a lot of foods that taste better later. For instance, anything you've stewed. I think a lot of things that cook for a long amount of time, when they have a time to rest, the flavors kind of melt, the juices come back into the meat, and they just taste way better. I love turkey the next day.
Let's step back a second to the making of the meal. You've got your turkey in the oven. There's no room for the pie. So as soon as the turkey comes out, you've got to make sure to get the oven to the right temperature and get the pie in.
Yeah, you can do that. But don't most people around here, they all have, you know, professional – well, a lot of people have professional equipment. Pies are best – I would take the time to warm it. So, you know, or you just leave the pie on the counter, serve the meal. Once the turkey's out of the oven, you're sitting down and eating – sneak back in the kitchen and put your pie in. Then you'll smell the smell of the pie while eating your turkey. Nothing nicer than that.
So you make sure not to eat too much turkey so you have
room
for pie.
And remember, this meal isn't rushed. You know, this should be a long all-day event. You're not going anywhere. There's nothing to do. Just take your time and sit back and enjoy it.
So what do you do with the turkey carcass after you've gotten about as much meat off it as you're going to get on Thanksgiving and the next day?
Well, I try and break it up. I take a big cleaver and I crack it up because it takes a lot of room. And then if I can't get to it, I just put it in a plastic bag and I put it in the freezer. And then later on or that same day, I make a big pot of turkey soup. And it's the most delicious thing. And I don't always use it for soup. Sometimes I just make turkey stock and then I freeze the stock and I'll use it in other places. But you could always hold it. If you say, I don't feel like doing it, just throw it in the freezer.
So when you make the turkey soup, how do you make it?
I take the turkey carcass. I put it in the pot. I add carrots, celery, onions, bay leaves, and I bring it to the boil, and then I lower it so it's simmering, and I simmer it for a long time. The longer you cook it, the better flavor it gets. And then I take all that – I strain all that stuff out.
You strain everything out?
Yeah, because –
So you don't eat the carrots?
No. All the nutrition's out of it. You've cooked it for too long. And then I take that, and then I make soup with it. Then I'll take a fresh pot of vegetables, sauté that up, and then I'll add the turkey stock back to it.
Why do you have to sauté the vegetables before you add the stock?
Because they get a much better flavor that way. The onions are very sharp, but when you sauté them, the sugar starts to come out and they start to develop a bit of sweetness and you get a much better – and you know what else is really good to put in there is some diced up parsnips as well.
You know what I would like to say also to our listeners out there who eat raw onions? Don't come talk to me within 5 hours of doing that.
It's not pretty.
That's happened.
It's really – oh, yeah. I knew this guy who ate raw garlic all the time. He was very healthy, but who wanted to talk to him?
No. Well, and I think raw onions are even worse.
I don't know.
We're talking to Stacy Pearl. It's our Thanksgiving, day before Thanksgiving show. I hear that you brought with you some turkey facts.
I have some crazy turkey facts because, you know, we have to keep this interesting every year. So this is my first favorite one is Ben Franklin, in a letter to his daughter, proposed that turkey become the official U.S. bird. Just think maybe they could put, like, you know, flags with big flying turkeys on them. It would be nice. The heaviest turkey ever raised? Guess how big do you think the heaviest turkey was?
Well, let me think of my terrier, two of them. 50 pounds?
86 pounds.
No.
86 pounds, the size of a large dog. Yes. And also,
really large dog.
Oh, yeah.
Like an overweight golden retriever.
Yeah. And you know turkeys can fly?
I've heard that.
Yep. They can fly short distances, and they could fly up to 55 miles per hour. Isn't that nuts?
That's amazing.
And a turkey can run 20 miles per hour. I thought they couldn't even move.
Well, the way we treat them, they can't.
You know, I just thought that was a riot. And also, this is my favorite one. Turkeys, their heads change color when they become excited.
Well, it's the same with us.
Yep.
You know, here's another thing that we didn't even talk about. We should put this at the beginning of the show if we could do that, which we can't. How do you choose the turkey in the first place?
Oh, that's a very good question. Now, if you have the option of going to a market that has fresh birds, like we have Whole Foods and stuff like that, I would go with a fresh, non-chemical, non-hormonal turkey. And there's a bunch of different brands out there, and they're not that pricey. And what you'll find if you look at one of those birds is they don't have the gigantic inflated breasts of like a supermarket butterball turkey because they haven't been treated.
I thought you were going to say the gigantic inflated breasts of a supermodel. No, supermarket.
I would never say that. You know, so you'll find there are much thinner, leaner birds. So you might need to have more per person. Where usually you'd say about a pound of turkey per person. But on these birds, you're not going to get the volume of meat. But they're quite delicious, and they have a slightly wilder flavor to them. There's also a free-range Amish bird, which is available in town, which is very, very good.
You can get Amish birds here?
Yes.
A friend of mine from back east was saying.
Excellent. That's what I have been using for the past few years. They're excellent. And they're also, once again, they're not that expensive, you know. And if you can get them unfrozen, it's better because you know they're fresher. You know, at a lot of places in town, you have to go and pre-order. You know, do it now if that's what you'd like to do.
Do it now. Now it's the day before Thanksgiving.
Oh, my God. It's too late for that. Yes. You should have done it already. Excuse me. I got my days mixed up. So that's one way to go. But if you need to get a frozen bird, you know, you just look at one. There's a number of brands in the supermarket. As I said, don't go for the largest thing you could find. You know, I think those tend to be sort of like the largest eggplant on the shelf is not the best eggplant. It tends to be a bit more fibrous. And if you get a fresh bird, keep it refrigerated. And when you unwrap the birds, they're all wrapped in, you know, that was that shrink plastic wrap. Always wash it inside, outside. And don't forget, there's a little package of parts on the inside. You must take those out.
Yeah, they're wrapped in paper. You don't really want to be baking
sometimes,
that.
You know, it's interesting. In the Amish birds and in the Diestel birds, which are the organic birds, it's wrapped in plastic.
Very
so
odd.
It's very important.
Is
to
plastic
take them
in
out.
The Bible?
Yes. Apparently, it's very important to take this out. Many people, especially young people who are making their first turkey, are known to have cooked the birds with the stuff on the inside.
Not, I'm sure that
not
that
a good
happened.
Plan.
No,
not
no,
a good
no.
plan.
Does not lend the flavor that you want.
And also, if you want to spend big money, you can order birds, organic birds, heritage brands from different farms across the country. And you could pick, you know, red rooster and black something or other. And they're really, really extraordinary. But they're like four times the price. But they are really, really tasty. And you can go online and look up heritage birds. And that's another option for you as well.
Now here, I've gone, for example, to the marketplace in the past, or the Montañita Co-op supermarket, as it's now called. And they'll say, do you want an organic bird or an all-natural bird?
Mm-hmm.
Any difference in flavor?
Well, it's really a matter of certification. You know, you need special farm certifications to call it organic, whereas the Amish are just called all-natural. You know, for my taste, they both work. And I don't think you can get a better bird than those Amish birds. There are a lot of people that don't feel comfortable unless they see the certified organic symbol. That's your call. But I would doubt that people could taste the difference on that.
So you have 10 people over. How much weight, turkey weight, do you need to put in your oven?
Are you going to be wanting leftovers?
Of course.
Okay. I would get a 20-pound bird. You know, I personally would just double it.
If you're just having one, person.
If you're just having one meal – you know, and people are leaving, I would go with a pound and a half per person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that'll work.
Yeah.
So Thanksgiving, I guess it's sort of, I mean, not officially, but it's kind of the beginning of the winter season. And so we have a whole winter to look forward to, where if you're going to eat fresh foods, they're not going to be green. You know, what constitute winter foods?
Well, first of all, I always think root vegetables. You have parsnips. You have beets. You have rutabaga. All these like old-fashioned things that you could – you know, when you used to have a cold cellar and you could store in your cold cellar and you could have stuff to make all winter long. And I think of soups and stews. You know, all these kind of things. And also you have to remember a lot of the stuff you can get at the farmer's market. And it's all great stuff to have. And I think that if you – I always like to get a big bag of parsnips. And what I do with them is are you a fan of parsnips? I happen to love parsnips.
Ah, they're okay. You know? I don't know how to cook them, so I never make them.
Here's a way. What I like to do is I peel them and I parboil them, because I find that if you roast them completely, they get way too dried out. I parboil them and I freeze them in Ziploc bags. And then when I make a chicken, which is a great winter thing, you throw a chicken in the oven, and I take the parsnips and I toss them in a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper, and I put them in the bottom of the roasting pan with the chicken. And I roast them, and I keep basting them. They get golden brown from the chicken fat. And if you want to roast parsnips and you're not roasting a chicken, I have a little jar of goose fat. And I put a little of that in. And it makes
schmaltz.
A little goose schmaltz. And it makes the most delicious flavor. And roasted vegetables are very, very easy to do. And if you have leftover roasted vegetables, they become soup very easily. So that's a great thing to get going. And another thing I like to do is sort of do like a chicken stew or a beef stew, sweet potatoes, white potatoes, lima beans, all that hearty, heavy peasant food. This is the time for it. And this is all do-ahead food. If you happen to be off on a Sunday, you could get a big pot of stew going. I mean, you know, and I would eat the same thing all week. I could eat it every day. Or if you're French or want to be French or have a lot of free time, you can make a fabulous pot of cassoulet with sausage and beans. This is a time for the big, heavy meals. And interestingly enough, all these things I've mentioned are meat items. But, for instance, Deborah Madison has a whole bunch of these great savory vegetable stews that you can do. You know
what we haven't talked about?
What?
This is very important. What do vegetarians do on Thanksgiving?
Oh, they suffer. They suffer terribly. They're okay with the side dishes, but I put the chicken stock in everything.
Tofu. Just, you know what? Just don't tell them.
Yeah, and then, you know what? And then they go, this is so good. Now, you know, what can you do with tofu at Thanksgiving?
What can you do with tofu ever?
You can roast it. You could bake it. You could make tofu stuffing. But you could already have the bread stuffing, so you don't need to do that.
You've got enough protein
I'll tell
already.
You something that we do as a vegetarian option at Thanksgiving is I'll take half a butternut squash. I'll hollow it out. I'll roast it with a little maple and butter, and then I'll make sort of like a black bean chili and fill it with that, and then put the top of the squash back on so it has like a little, you know, a little cover on it. It's like a little pumpkin. Mm-hmm. And then that's a really good vegetarian option. So that's hearty.
And you give one to each person.
One to each person. So they don't feel like, oh, there's nothing. I have no main course on my plate.
And it's sort of fancy and festive, really.
Yeah. That totally works as a vegetarian option. There's, you know, you might want to mix a little cheese in there so there's some protein. But, yeah, I find that the best thing to give vegetarians at Christmas – at Thanksgiving is something with beans. You know, beans. You could do like a wild rice black bean stew, something like that with a little butternut squash in it. That sort of – I'm thinking like – somehow I think sort of Native American. You know, I'm thinking maybe even some sort of bulgur wheat or, you know, there's a great
squash,
recipe.
Squash, beans, and corn.
Yeah. Go pilgrim, you know. There's a great recipe in the Moosewood Cookbook for a vegetarian chili, which is made with bulgur wheat, which is reconstituted in hot tomato juice, and it has the exact texture of ground beef. And you could also – I mean, I think the idea of doing a container, a butternut squash container or I'm not sure, you know, you could even do it in a phyllo pastry. So I think the thing about vegetarians, being quite seriously, is not to make them think like, okay, this is the meal, you have everything but a main course. If you can make them a specific main course, I think it's much fairer for them. They don't feel so left out. And phyllo pastry is a great thing. You could wrap all kinds of vegetables. You could do a curried Southwestern vegetable wrapped in phyllo pastry, and then they could have all the other side dishes. And then I think they'll still be your friends.
And, of course, if you're a vegetarian, all dessert is fair game.
Absolutely, because I don't use lard in my pie crust, though I hear it's great. I've never actually done that. You know, though some people – you know, the English swear by it.
Well, English cuisine.
Don't even say cuisine. Now stop that.
We're talking to Stacy Pearl. Stacy, it's wonderful to have you back, and we are here every year, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, the day before Thanksgiving. So what are you doing on Thanksgiving this year?
Well, I do what I do every year is I probably have about, I don't know, 30 orders to get out, most of them small. It's all about packaging. I get those all out the door. They're usually everybody's picked up their orders or we've delivered them by 2 o'clock. And then I see what's left. What did I make too much of? And then I compose my meal. I do a turkey and I'll usually roast it at work, and then I'll look around at the side dishes and see what I can combine to make my own side dishes out of it. And then most of the people who I work with all come to my house this year, my new house, and have Thanksgiving dinner together.
Well, have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thank you very much.
We've been talking to Stacy Pearl. She is the host of Mouth of Wonder, which airs on KSFR Saturday mornings at 11:30. Every Saturday morning, and she is a chef with Walter Burke Catering. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And that means that you can actually go to santafe.radiocafe.org, replay the podcast, and write down the recipes if you were listening today and want to hear anything again. And it stays there permanently, as much as anything can be permanent in this world. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz. Broadcasting from the studios of KSFR, my name is Mary Charlotte. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you later. Ciao.